Our second, or excuse me, our third case this morning is 2020-599, the State of Ohio versus Manson M. Bryant. For Mr. Bryant is Mr. Hirsch.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Max Hirsch on behalf of Manson Bryant. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Bryant's outburst only revealed shock and anger over his sentence. His comments were directed at the trial court alone, and they did not contradict his previous statements of remorse. Therefore, the trial court lacked a lawful basis for increasing Mr. Bryant's sentence by 6 years. This court should reverse. The broad language of revised code, section 295308, permits courts of appeals to review findings made by a trial court, even if sentences as a whole are no longer reviewable. Thus, the question here is whether the record contains clear and convincing evidence that the trial court's findings surrounding Mr. Bryant's outburst were contrary to law. Considering the meaning of remorse, Mr. Bryant's statements, and all the surrounding circumstances, the trial court's modification here was unlawful. According to Black's Law Dictionary, remorse means a strong feeling of sincere regret and sadness over one's having behaved badly or done harm. And look at Mr. Bryant's statements that he made in his pre-sentencing allocution, which did reflect remorse that the trial court did consider. Mr. Bryant acknowledged that he's made a lifetime of bad decisions, and he regretted the harm that he caused to his family. He also said, despite his addiction, he acknowledged that any change in the future would have to come from him. After the sentence was announced, Mr. Bryant reacted and used profanity, but nothing he said contradicted those previous statements. Instead, what the record shows is that he was reacting to the court's sentence. One of the first things he says was to bring up that this was 22 years. He accused the court of being racist, and he accused the court of never giving him a chance.
Counselor, can a court really determine whether someone is remorseful? I mean, how do you know, is there some mechanism a court can determine remorsefulness from good acting to lawyers saying, if you say these things, it will get you less time? Or I mean, how do we really know? Or how does a court really, trial court, know?
To be sure, it's going to depend on the facts of a case. It's going to be a subjective judgment in many instances. And the trial court here did make an express finding that Mr. Bryant expressed some remorse in deciding that a 22-year sentence was appropriate. And we're not asking this court to reweigh that degree of remorsefulness. The question is, after the trial court made that finding, whether it could then revoke that finding based on Mr. Bryant's behavior. It was, in that sense, a legal error for the trial court to find that Mr. Bryant's outburst had some bearing on remorsefulness, where Mr. Bryant was...
Counsel, let's place the outburst in context. The allocution in which he expressed remorse for his past actions took place before the sentence was imposed. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And as he awaited his sentence, he was aware that the co-defendant in this case, who arguably is more culpable of the more heinous aspects of the crime that was committed, he pled and he received a 12-year sentence. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so the trial court was asking for something because it was arguably the facts, it was less culpable, Mr. Bryant. They were advocating for a sentence more proportional, severe than a co-defendant received. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I reviewed the sentencing memorandum from the state. They were not advocating for a certain number in the written sentencing memorandum. They just asked for consecutive sentences. Is that correct?
To be honest, I haven't looked at the memorandum. I think during the sentencing, the state asked for maybe something closer to 20 years, but I don't believe they asked for an exact number.
So, given the outburst, isn't it more probable that it had more to do with the reaction to the severity of the sentence than a betrayal of remorse?
Absolutely. And it's not just the, you know, and I just referenced the word. Absolutely. And I just referenced the words Mr. Bryant used in response, but Your Honor points to the timing as well. The Mr. Bryant's counsel, counsel of the state, they all made their statements with respect to sentencing during the hearing. And the trial court began explaining its reasoning for the sentence, weighing all the factors and so on.
Counsel, let me interrupt you there, because I mean, I think that those things, at least seem to be clear. From a legal standpoint, based on the law, how can this court change the trial court's imposition of the additional 6 years when, and I, if you would do, if you concede this, a trial court can change a sentence any time before journalizing it, or making it final, I should say. How do we reconcile the law that gives the trial court the ability to do that?
The trial courts are required to consider the sentencing factors in crafting the sentence. And what happened here is pretty unique in that the trial court announced a 22-year sentence, which is not in dispute here, and then made a discrete, specific finding that impacted the sentence in a specific way. We know that it was changed by 6 years based on a specific finding made by the trial court. And that finding should be subject to review here on appeal.
Mr. Hirsch?
It is being reviewed, but again, how do we reconcile what it is that you ask us to do, at least under what umbrella of law, when the law is clear that before the judge made the sentence final, it could change the sentence?
The trial court made a finding that Mr. Bryant's outburst was related to remorse. So this court can review that as a legal matter, whether Mr. Bryant's behavior actually showed that based on the record before it. And as Justice Donnelly pointed to, all the words and all the surrounding circumstances showed that Mr. Bryant was having a heat of the moment reaction to learning that he was going to spend the next 22 years of his life in prison.
So you concede, although the trial court can change the sentence before it makes it final, you're arguing here that the reasons for the change here are illegal and should therefore be reversed.
Exactly. And a trial court can certainly consider new information or can consider a defendant's behavior in certain circumstances. Imagine a defendant who directly threatens the judge or who makes a comment about the victim or
well, how would a threat to the judge make that any more or less likely that he's remorseful?
Well, that would maybe not directly on remorse, but that would certainly relate to recidivism, that someone making a criminal threat in response to you know, committing a separate crime in response to a sentencing announcement, that would at least be reasonably related to it. Here, Mr. Bryant, again, as the 11th District pointed out, a person can be sincerely remorseful, yet still have a negative reaction to the sentence that was imposed. Mr. Bynes, who was more involved in this crime, who also broke into the trailer, additionally committed an assault and seemed to take the lead on scoping it out and so on, got a 12-year sentence. And in light of that, counsel for Mr. Bryant requested 10 years.
One more question, and then I'll be quiet and let you finish. Some of Mr. Bryant's insults and profanity-laced tirade to the trial court dealt with issues of race. Is there anything in the record that indicates the race of Mr. Bryant's co-defendants?
No, not on the record.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Hirsch, I'm looking at what was in the transcript, and your client, the judge said literally, he's been to prison 3 times on 4 cases. He's got 9 prior crimes of violence before this case. He's got 11 instances of probation violations, resisting arrest, obstructing justice, in contempt of court, and numerous convictions, as well as a history of juvenile delinquency. So, I guess I'm having difficulty understanding how it even really matters whether what the judge did in terms of her sentencing, whether it was the initial sentence or before she was done with the whole sentencing on the record, added more time to it because she essentially changed her mind on the record. I guess my concern is really more, was the judge able to do what she did, and not so much whether we judge substantively the content of what she had to say, because she put the reasons on the record relating to the factors. So whether it's remorse or anything, I mean, why does that matter, what the judge said about, I guess he's not remorseful, as I thought.
Well, I have 2 points in response to that. The first being that Mr. Bryant's criminal history can and was considered by the trial court in determining that a 22-year sentence was appropriate here. And we're not challenging whether that initial sentence was contrary to law. Then what happened, second, is that the trial court made a specific finding related because of Mr. Bryant's outburst, put that finding on the record and said, because of the outburst, I find that I no longer find that you're remorseful, and I'm adding 6 years to your sentence. As Justice Fischer pointed out in his concurrence in Jones, when a trial court does make a finding under 29, 11, or 12, that finding is subject or should be subject to appellate review in limited circumstances. Here, where what Mr. Bryant did is punishable without a doubt as contempt of court for his disruption, nothing else he did provided further information or provided any relevant basis related to a sentencing factor for increasing a sentence by 6 years.
Counsel, did your client accept responsibility for the crime?
In a sense, yes. And I acknowledge his statement of remorse wasn't perfect in the sense that he didn't make reference to the victim, for example, but the trial court, in weighing that, didn't say, I find the most remorse possible. The trial court found some remorse. So,
okay, so what exactly did he say for indicia of remorse?
Well, he acknowledged that he's made a lifetime of bad decisions. And
okay, that's bad decisions in the past for this particular incident, crime.
There may not have been a statement directly related to this crime, but what he did acknowledge was in his life, which and including this conviction, related to a lifetime of bad decisions and criminal convictions, and that he caused harm to his family, for example, and he said he can't continue to blame other people, and he has to be the one to make any change in the future.
All right, so you're saying that he accepted responsibility for his past actions?
Correct.
Okay, but not so much as to, I'll accept responsibility, but only if I get a sentence I like.
No, that's not, the record doesn't show that. The trial court did find some remorse in Mr. Bryant's statements, and what happened after the sentencing announcement, the trial court may have believed that subjectively that this was an insincere statement of remorse made previously, but that reasoning by the trial, that was not a reasonable finding by the trial court. And the record just doesn't support it, where Mr. Bryant's post-sentencing statements didn't contradict those statements, where the trial court did credit him with some remorse.
They do kind of contradict what he said, right? He says, I can't continue to blame others for my actions and my behavior. I have become jaded towards the legal system. Having this trial was honest and eye-opening for me. I have a newfound respect for the efforts of the attorneys, judges, jurors, and goal in giving an accused person an opportunity to have a case heard. That's all anyone can ask. I am thankful for the opportunity afforded by the court, by the day in court, and I respect the decision the juries have made. I alone have the power to end this cycle of incarceration. Now, and the judge presumably found at least that had some impact. He said that was, he found there was remorse. And then your client turned around and said things that directly contradicted what he had just said.
Well, there are parts.
I mean, you have to admit that his behavior afterwards is directly contradictory to some of his statements.
It's contradicting
respect for judges and the legal system.
It was contradictory to some of his statements, but I'll concede that those are not statements of remorse. Those weren't saying I respect the judge, the jury, and the lawyer. I don't take those to mean those to be comments as sincere regret or sadness over what he did in this case. There were other pieces of that statement that more accurately meet that definition that I set forth at the beginning.
Well, whether you call it remorse or not, I mean, it is fair to say that his actions immediately after sentence were directly contradictory to what he just told the judge. True?
Yes, but the statements that were contradicted, we do not contend were related to remorse, because just as much as disrespect towards the trial court's not a sentencing factor, nor is showing respect or deference to a trial court at the same time.
Accepting responsibility, I think, certainly is part of remorse and how a judge is going to sentence someone.
Yeah, and he did accept some responsibility in his statement. It's just that the comments about the court and the legal process were unrelated to that. And I see I'm over my time unless this court has any other questions. I'll just ask again for this court to reverse and modify Mr. Bryant's sentence by vacating the 6-year increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGee.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court.
Ms. McGee, I want to ask you a question that I wasn't able to ask your colleague, and I think either one of you could answer it. But essentially what the judge did was increase the sentence by 3 years to a maximum on each of the two counts that were being served consecutively. And correct. wouldn't the statement that she made in doing that really have to go to supporting a maximum sentence under the statute? And is that how we should be looking at it? But she already made her reasons for consecutive. And so what she essentially did was said, I'm going from 8 to 11 years on the two counts that I've already given reasons for consecutive. And all she really needed to do was to give a basis for why it was the maximum now. I mean, and so wouldn't we be analyzing what she said in relation to maximum sentences?
On those two counts, Your Honor, I think that would be correct. But I would argue that the maximum sentence on those two counts was warranted. And it was not a maximum sentence versus the entire exposure. There was the two counts that were run concurrent time. Right. And
Counselor,
I think—
Counselor, wait a minute. How can you say they're warranted when the court didn't give them at first and the state didn't ask for it?
Well, ultimately, the determination of an appropriate sentence and the appropriate way to weigh the purposes and principles of sentencing comes down to the trial court. So yes, in this case, the state did ask for a minimum of 20 years. I don't think that's necessarily in contrast with the sentence that was imposed in this case. The state wasn't capping its recommendation at 20 years, and in asking for a minimum, I think that's in line with what the judge determined was an appropriate sentence in this case. It's not as if the state—
Well, then the judge gave 22.
Correct.
So then how is the additional 6 years, where is that authorized? I mean, where does that come from?
Well, the 6 years is within the statutory range that's set forth
But it's not what the judge gave. The judge gave 22. There was the outburst and the tirade and the allegations of racism, and then he gets 6 more years.
So I would respond to that by saying that the record sort of indicates that the judge intended on imposing that 28-year term in the first place, because he notes that he does find a certain amount of remorse and offers mitigation to the appellant because of that expression. So it isn't as if the 22-year sentence was the judge's initial sentence. It appears that the 28 sentence was what the judge initially intended to impose on these sentences, i.e. the max on those first two counts. However,
let me ask you about that. So in my review of the record, Mr. Bryant was 32 years old at the time of the sentencing, and the initial sentence, he found out he wouldn't be released from prison until he was 54. And then after the outburst, he found out he wouldn't be released till he would reach the age of 60. So, or after the sentence, I want to give you a hypothetical. Had the judge said, as a result of this outburst that you just displayed in my courtroom, I'm going to add 6 more years to your sentence, and that's all, would that be a lawful sentence?
The state would submit that would be a lawful sentence. It would make appellate review more challenging.
I'm sorry, did you say would or would not?
It would. It would be a proper action of the court to increase appellant's sentence without making that specific finding that it's related to his expression of remorse. However, it does help with appellate review that we know exactly what the judge was thinking in this case because he enumerated that finding on the record.
Well, where in the statute does it say the judge can consider courtroom behavior at sentencing to impose additional terms related to what the legislature says can be punished the crimes of robbery and burglary? Where is that? Can you point to a statute where that a judge can consider that?
Well, the judge is required to consider the statements that are made on the record at the sentencing hearing. And I would argue that the judge's determination that the courtroom conduct indicated a lack of remorse, not that that was what the judge was considering as far as a sentencing factor. He directly related the conduct to a specific finding enumerated in the statute.
But the original 22-year sentence, the judge said he considered his genuine, what he perceived as genuine remorse as mitigating. And that's what led from the two robbery and burglaries going from 11 to 8. And so he said that the outburst betrayed that he wasn't sincere. Can you explain how does an outburst in anger at the reaction of the severity of a sentence betray that he wasn't remorseful 10 minutes earlier in his allocution? Even the Court of Appeals had a problem with that logic.
I would take issue with that necessarily, but as Justice DeWine stated earlier, the statements that the defendant made after receiving his sentence were in direct contrast to the statements he made prior when he was expressing remorse. Secondly, to your point regarding the reaction to the severity of the sentence, the state would submit that that does demonstrate a lack of remorse. It shows a cynical and remorseless contempt for the law. It fails to recognize the severity of the appellant's conduct in this case. It also shows an inability for him to control himself in free society. All of those factors directly relate to a defendant's likelihood to recidivate once he's released.
Ms. McCabe, I need an answer to the question. Did the judge put enough on the record in giving reasons for the sentence, regardless of at which phase it was, to support consecutive sentencing or to support the maximum sentence on the two counts when the judge increased it from 8 to 11 years on each count?
Certainly. I would argue that under the statutory findings, the sentence in this case was warranted based on the offenses that were committed as well as the offender who committed them. And the judge enumerated those findings specifically on the record.
Now, counsel, let me ask this question then. Based on what you're saying, how can a reviewing court, looking at the exact words of the disrespectful outburst, related to the shock or surprise about the severity of the sentence, and your argument here that it showed his lack of remorse, or the trial court saying shows lack of remorse, it's no more connected. If we find that his outburst is no more connected to a showing or lack thereof of remorse as it is to whether he likes pizza, how can a reviewing court ever determine whether a sentence is being imposed based on improper or inappropriate factors? I mean, what does the reviewing court weigh, particularly if the trial court statement, I find that you obviously don't have any remorse, doesn't have any relationship to the comments? Are we to allow the discretion of trial court judges to just be unabated? How do we review that? The appellate courts, Supreme Court, how do we review whether it's inappropriate, whether there's inappropriate factors or just simply human nature being personally offended that come into play when the statutes don't allow that?
The state would submit that the appellate courts review those to make sure that the record is not clearly and convincingly, or the finding is not clearly and convincingly unsupported by the record, which is exactly what the 11th District did here. They looked at the trial court's finding and the fact that the trial court determined that the outburst was directly related to the appellant's lack of remorse. They found that given the circumstances of this case, this specific case, that finding was reasonable by the trial court. The court could infer that that outburst was a sign that the previous expression of remorse was in fact insincere. So it's not unfettered discretion to the trial judge, but in a case like this, where obviously there is a difference in opinion as to what appellant's outburst was and was not, because defendant himself states that it wasn't a showing of remorse, and the trial judge determined that it was. So when we have two conflicting opinions, both of which are sound, I would argue that the judge's determination is much more reasonable in this case. Who do we defer to? And the state submits that we defer to the trial judge, who is in the best position to make these types of determinations.
So let's assume hypothetically the trial court increased his sentence by 6 years simply because the trial court judge was angry and offended. Would the 6 years be appropriate?
No, Your Honor. I would argue that it's not appropriate to increase an appellate sentence based on the fact that your feelings got hurt. But I would also submit that there's nothing in the record to show.
But how can we review that?
Well, I mean, you're stuck with the record that's sent to you, and the judge on the record made relation to his finding. He didn't come out and say, "Oh, you're disrespecting me 6 more years." He specifically said, "I thought you were showing some sort of remorse. You clearly were not, and I'm increasing your sentence based on a finding that there is no remorse." And in this case, that was the only mitigating factor in appellant's sentence. There was nothing else that would have mitigated his sentence.
But counsel, earlier you told me that in my hypothetical, if he would have said, as a result of what you just did, I'm adding 6 more years to your sentence, you told me that would be a lawful sentence. That would not be contrary to law.
Yes, the state's position is that would not be contrary to law. It would make appellate review more challenging. And hypothetically, a court could say, we don't know why the judge did this, and we're not sure if this was proper. And so in that case, maybe it would warrant remand, despite the fact that the sentence is not necessarily contrary to law. In that case, the appellate court may not be clearly and convincingly sure that the finding was supported by the record because they're not exactly sure. But that is not what happened in this case. The judge specifically enumerated that finding and the revision to his finding then on the record when he increased the sentence. So we know why the judge did what he did here.
Counsel, in the exchange, Mr. Bryant's outburst, he accuses the judge. He says she never gave him probation. Or any something to the effect. Let me pull it up. Was his expectation was he was going to get probation?
Correct.
That's the only way I can read that.
Yes, and the state submits that is not a reasonable expectation. There was a presumption for prison in these cases, or these offenses. There was mandatory gun specifications in these cases. Prior to trial, the state's plea offer contained prison time. The defendant knew from the state sentencing memorandum that the state was asking for consecutive sentencing. There was actually even a merger issue that was still pending prior to sentencing, where the defendant in this case could have received an additional 14 years had the trial court not merged the kidnapping with the robbery.
And I understand, counsel, I understand your point that she gave him as much consideration in the first iteration of the sentence as she thought appropriate, given the circumstances, his statements, et cetera. But his unrealistic expectation of probation and saying that she never gave him a chance, which is a direct quote, indicates to me that his remorse was, he didn't understand, I think, what the whole situation was, and the what he voiced it at showing remorse was his attempt at justifying probation.
I think I would disagree with that position, Your Honor, because when the defendant makes his initial allocution, he sort of recognizes that he is going to prison. He says that to the judge, and he says he doesn't want to die in prison. So the state would submit that the defendant was well aware that he was going to be sentenced to prison prior to receiving that sentence.
Probation wasn't even on the table. Isn't that correct? It had to be a mandatory sentence because of the gun specification. So he had no expectation of probation. He was just looking for something proportional to what the co-defendant received.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would like to briefly address that statement where you were discussing the culpability of Bynes. The state's position is that Mr. Bryant and Mr. Bynes were equally culpable in the robbery and the burglary of Mr. Gonzalez. Yes, the evidence did show that Mr. Bynes was the individual who physically possessed the gun during the robbery. But if we believe that information, the testimony at trial was that Bryant was the first individual to enter the room because the victim testified that the second person who came in his room was the one who was carrying the gun.
Well, but counsel, isn't it Mr. Bynes who cased the place, the two co-defendants cased the place? I mean, if everyone's culpable, obviously.
Yes, and I disagree with opposing counsel's classification, characterization that they cased the place. The evidence showed that Ms. Medina was well aware of how to enter that trailer prior to the evening of them going there. She was friends with the victim.
Ms. Medina and Mr. Bynes went first. There was no evidence that Mr. Bryant was involved in hatching the plan or scheme to commit the crime.
That's not correct. The two co-defendants, they went to the victim's trailer to get money so that they could go buy drugs. They were not there to case the trailer. I understand why opposing counsel characterized it that way, but that's not necessarily the state's position on what the evidence showed. And I would also briefly like to point out, because I recognize my time is over, just to address an issue earlier, the record does reflect that both Mr. Bynes and Mr. Bryant are African-Americans. The victim testified that two quote unquote black men were robbed him, and that came out during testimony at trial that both Mr. Bryant and Mr. Bynes are African American.
Okay.
One more question, if I could. Did the state advocate for consecutive sentence on the co-defendant that pled in this case?
I can't speak to that directly, Your Honor. I'm not sure if we advocated for consecutive sentencing. I know that the co-defendant was given the benefit of his plea agreement and did plead to lesser offenses than the defendant in this case was facing. I can't speak specifically as to what our sentencing recommendation was in that case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Follow-up.
Go ahead.
When he said, "You never gave me probation," is it possible that he'd been before this judge before because of all of his repeat offenses?
Yes, Your Honor. The record indicates that this is the fifth case that this appellant had before the judge. And the state would submit that that is why the judge was in the best position here to make the determinations that he did regarding the appropriate sentence for the appellant in this case. So yes, the judge is very familiar with this appellant. He has sent him to prison prior.
Yeah, because I saw you never gave me a chance after you never gave me probation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hirsch. You've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you. There's one point I want to zero in on rebuttal here, and it's the trial court's failure to make a reasoned decision in light of the circumstances of this case. Mr. Bryant's outburst came immediately after the trial court announced that the aggregate sentence would be 22 years long. His comments were directed at the trial court and related to his sentence. He disrupted the proceedings, and it's undisputed that this constituted contempt. But to modify Mr. Bryant's sentence based on in-court behavior, it has to be related to a sentencing factor. And the trial court mistook this disrespect, this disruption as being related to remorse here. And the trial court failed to do what this court cautioned the trial courts ought to do in Bachman when considering disruptive courthouse behavior. And it's not to suggest that the trial court here did something sanctionable or is egregious, but the principle stands that the trial court could have taken a pause, could have had Mr. Bryant escorted out of the courtroom and then resumed proceedings. But instead, the trial court had an immediate reaction to behavior, which amounted to nothing more than contempt of court. And just because the trial court cabined it in the language of a sentencing factor doesn't make it so, when the only interpretation of the evidence supported by clear and convincing evidence on this record is that Mr. Bryant's reaction was purely a reaction to a sentence that he was not expecting, whether that's the 10 years his counsel suggested, whether that's probation, even irrespective of whether that was a reasonable expectation, that's what he was reacting to.
Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.